So welcome, everyone. I see new faces here. Welcome. My name is Mary. I am a mystic. My mystical experiences began when I was 6 years old and have continued throughout my life. For a definition of a mystic is one who has had an experience that has brought them into union and communion with the divine, with God. And I have the voice within, which means that there's a conversation going on all the time. And as a result of those early experiences and those that have continued throughout my life, I have been having a series of extraordinary adventures, not only in this lifetime, but also the inner life, which I have. And for many of us, the inner life is one that often we come to it later rather than earlier. And I came to the inner life at a very early age. And I want to honor my parents for being so extraordinary in keeping my feet on the ground, because I would be in deep meditation, though I didn't know it was meditation, and my mother would be continually pulling me and saying, there are things to do, we have things to do, we must do this, we must do that. And so I learned a great deal about doing while I was deeply entrenched in the being. And I honor that for many of us, particularly in this time in which we live, our self-worth is about how much we do. And in truth, it is what is the nature of our being. And our being is what allows us to know the truth of who we really are. And whatever we do, then we bring a reflection of that inner life to whatever the doing is. And so I have done a great deal of doing in this life, and I've done it very successfully. And I honor that the preparation and the family that I chose to come into really gave me many energies that I needed in order to be fully realized and also fully human and fully divine. And for those of us who understand the nature of doing being an aspect that we really choose to master, then our lives become what I call in the sweet ease. We're moving with ease in how we live and in our relationships and all the things that unfold in this life. I believe that we have these soul agreements that we make prior to coming into the body that really define very often not who we are as a spiritual being having a human experience, but also a human being having a spiritual experience. And tonight I'm going to talk about beliefs. Beliefs are very, very powerful things. And we have someone else at the door. Come in. We'll add some more chairs, not a problem. Yeah, just y'all scoot out just a little bit, and they can just scoot right in there. Perfect. So, we're just starting. Y'all's timing is perfect. Gave a little intro, and I want to talk about beliefs tonight. And when I first began to deeply contemplate beliefs, which was over 30 years ago, I came across a story of a woman who had had an extraordinary experience, and I want to share it with you tonight to begin with. And if any of you came to the Summerlin house on the night that I talked about this when I used to live in Summerlin, then you may recall the story. This was a young woman who lived in the Pacific Northwest, and she'd had a dream that the teacher that she wished to find would come to her. And the following night, she had another dream in which she saw this woman. And it was an Indian woman, not from India, but from one of the tribes in North America. And she didn't know what tribe, but the face was so clear to her that she knew that this was her teacher. So, as divine order would have it, one day, and she was living in Seattle at the time, there was an announcement about a showing of photography that was going to be at a particular gallery. And she was so drawn to it. She said, you know, why do I need to go to this gallery? I just know I have to go to this gallery. And so she goes, and it just happens to be a photographer who has taken photos of Indian faces, the presence of Indian faces, from northern Canada. And those of you who know Canada, Canada is a huge country with a small population. And it has great wilderness in the northern part of that country. And the Algonquins and many of the other tribes of Canada still have a great presence in the northern part of Canada. Also, I need to let you know that in the summertime, Canada, because of its placement, has very long summer days. Very long summer days. That's all part of the story that we'll get to. So she sees the photograph. She gets in touch with the photographer. She said, I've got to find out about this woman. And he's only taken like 1,000 photographs, and this is just the few that he chose. And he said, well, the only thing I can remember is that she might be the lady who lives in the cabin at the end of the trail over there somewhere. Okay. So she follows the breadcrumbs. And she packs her bag, she goes to northern Canada, and she had asked for a reproduction of the picture so that she could show it to people and say, do you know this woman? And so little by little, she connected with someone who said, yes, I believe, you know, she's in the tribe over there somewhere. And so off she'd go to try and find over there somewhere. And eventually, she indeed came to the cabin in which this lovely Indian woman lived. And she knocked on the door, and the woman opened the door and looked upon her, and as often happens, she said, I've been waiting for you. So she walks in, they have a meal, and the woman said, tomorrow we begin. Before the first ray of sun, I will give you provisions for the day. You will have water and food, and I'm going to give you a sack. And she showed her the sack. It was a big canvas sack, and it had a shoulder strap, and it came to about her waist and hung down about to her ankles. And it was large enough that she could have stepped inside it, so it was a fairly large bag we're talking about. And the teacher said, before the sun rises, you will arise, we'll have breakfast together, and then as the first ray of the sun appears, you're to go on this trail. And she showed her what the trail was, and she said, you're to follow this trail until the last ray of the sun is almost ready to set, and then you'll make your way back on the trail to my cabin. And so, of course, the student was delighted, put her sack on the next morning, and began. And the teacher said, this is what you are to do. You are to remember every belief that you have, and to pick up a stone and put it in your bag for every belief that you have. And so the student went forth, and with every belief, she had to find a rock or a stone and put it in the bag. And this was all day long, and it was a very long day in the summer in Canada. And by the time she was on the trail, the sun was setting, and she had to be back at the cabin as the last ray of sun was disappearing. So it was all very beautifully choreographed. Her bag was so heavy that she could hardly drag it behind her. And she was exhausted, and she never realized that she had that many beliefs. So she came with her bag. The teacher greeted her. The teacher said, now sleep, and tomorrow we will work again. So she slept the next morning. The teacher said, now, you will take every stone out of the bag and you will tell me what belief it is. And you will name every belief with every single stone. Now, guess what we're going to do tonight? Oh, no, not that. Oh, yes, that. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to carry your bag. And you don't have to pick up the stones. But the truth is that in every single one of our bodies, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, we have been imprinted deeply with so many beliefs. And we have beliefs from our mother and father and from the generations before them that have been brought down through our mother and father and through what I call the family entity, which is the entity that is created by all the energies that come through the mother and the father, and that includes all the relatives. You know, I've heard people say, gosh, you know, when we have a family reunion, there are 40 people there. I go, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, you know, it's like I didn't grow up with that knowing about any of our relatives to speak of. So I wouldn't have that energy, which was also in divine order for me. And the aspects of each of our bodies having been imprinted with these beliefs, not only from our mother and father and the family entity, but the culture in which we were raised, the country in which we were raised, the education that we received, what were all the levels of energy that imprinted our beliefs? And when you think about it, it's very profound. I grew up with a background in England and Canada and South America. So I had all those belief systems of all those different cultures. I also grew up with a mother who was English and had Canadian energies going on, and my father, who was Southern, American Southern, which is very different than almost any other place in the whole wide world. So you put that in the mix and you stir it around, and all kinds of things happen because you get so many different kinds of beliefs. So if we were to look at any of our own energies and our beliefs, so we could begin with the spiritual body. Most of our spiritual bodies have been imprinted through either a religion or several religions or several mystical paths or spiritual paths, whatever the paths might have been. And in some cases, because they were imprinted at a very early age, we believed them until we grew enough that we said, you know, I don't think that belief really works for me anymore. And maybe we took that stone out of our bag and said, there's something else and I'm searching for it, or I've found what really works for me. We have beliefs about what is true in heaven and if the hell exists, what that is like. We have beliefs in what will happen if we're good and if we're not so good. We have beliefs about every aspect of who we are. And that's just in one body, in the spiritual body. Now you get to the mental body. Woo-wee! Think of all the thoughts that you have thought since the time you realized you even could think. All those thoughts have been influenced by beliefs. By beliefs. And what we think now, I can only say for myself, I think very different thoughts now than I did when I was a youngster, a teenager, early 20s, late 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and I'm now 70. So in my realm of consciousness, I mean, I have a whole bunch of thoughts that just keep floating around, you know. And a lot of them I said, thank you very much, I'm done with that thought. Have you all done that? I hope so. Where you've been very discriminating about the thoughts that you really want to think and the thoughts that matter to you. And if you think a thought that is less than love, are you aware of that? Are you aware, I've just had a thought that's less than love. Now, why do I have that thought? Why would I think that thought? What is the belief that I carry that it's okay that I can think thoughts that are less than love about myself or another? One has to be very thoughtful to understand which of these thoughts have really become a weight. If it's less than love, it has weight to it. If someone says, oh, your thoughts are weighty, that's true. You have to let that go. Now, when we get into the emotional body, oh boy, for most of us, I can only speak for myself in this regard, I was bombarded by so many of the beliefs of my family, my mother and father, and the family entity about what you could feel, what you couldn't feel, when it was appropriate to feel, when you should not feel that at all. Oh, it's okay if you feel here, but not there, etc., etc. And I walked a very circuitous path, trying to be sure that in this moment I was feeling what was the appropriate thing to be felt, because that was the belief in the family entity. And often if, I grew up with children are seen but not heard. So when I really wanted to be heard, I couldn't be heard, where did I put it? Right in my emotional body. So our emotional bodies have been filled with a lot of beliefs. And if you come from a culture, particularly as I did, that had many different levels of feeling, then I would have to choose what I hoped would be appropriate in any given moment about what I was feeling, and certainly in the expression of those feelings. So that was the emotional body. Now, in the physical body, we are also imprinted with beliefs about our physical body. And particularly in this culture, and growing up in the 50s, it wasn't as powerful, but starting in the 60s, there was a whole level of energy around this is how you're supposed to look, particularly if you want to be a hippie. Particularly if you want to be a love child. Particularly if you're going to leave your family and go and be wild in New York City. Okay, all those beliefs, all right? And breaking open some of those belief systems that had quite rigidly, in the 50s, held that energy. It had to look like this, and act like this, and speak like this, and be like this, and then you'd be okay. But if you just got over a little bit, got to just, you know, this. And being an artist, it was very hard for me to, you know, I just wanted to go, yeah, here we are. So, you come into the physical body, and part of our soul agreements are the energies that we choose in our physical body. Our strengths and our weaknesses are all decisions that we made prior to coming into the body, so that they would be our teachers, both our strengths and our weaknesses. And if we had a belief in the family that bodies couldn't do this or bodies should do that, then you would usually follow that. And often it was sub rosa. It wasn't articulated. It was all underneath. But we had to learn what that was underneath so that we could be part of the family entity. And if we went too far astray, you could feel the tug of the family entity wanting to pull you back in. Has anybody felt that tug besides me? Yes, you can nod your heads up and down if you have. Yes. Okay. So our energy field was very much predicated on whether or not those beliefs were holding us in that place, our place in the family entity. And the time came, and I'm assuming that everyone in this room has experienced it, else you wouldn't be in this room, that you said, it's time for me to step out of the family entity and to become who I really am. And even though I may not know what that is, I choose to leave the family entity and find out who I am and to see if that is something that will fulfill me. And interestingly for myself, I did that and spent years outside the family entity. And when I would come back in, often there was that certain look, you know, that they would give you when you came back in. Had you changed too much to be in the entity? And they would even verbalize to me, you know, we don't like who you've become. And I'd say, well, shucks, that's too bad. Bye. And I would continue on my journey. Beliefs have such a powerful energy upon us. And often, the belief of the family entity will keep us from being who we really are until finally we have done what? We have come to know the truth of ourselves at such a depth that we can stand before the family entity and anyone within our family and be at peace. There's no wavering inside us. We have peace within us because we have come to that place. And if you have come to that place, then something else begins to happen. It's almost as though it's the shedding of skins, you know, like the snake. Those old skin realities, those old energies that have held us, that we no longer say are part of who we are. And when we're upon whatever path we're on, whether it is in our work or our profession or in our personal life, our romantic life, our inner life, our outer life, whatever that life is, we bring all of that to the table. We bring our beliefs to the table. And we then look at the beliefs, particularly if we have a beloved. My beloved is sitting there, my Michelle. And when we got together, he had been in America long enough that he could say, oh, yeah, yeah, I know what she's talking about. But sometimes I'd speak Southern. So now he's writing down Southern, and he has a whole book of words that when I use them, he knows what that means. So we are continually balancing the beliefs that we now have in our adult life, and what are the beliefs that we're bringing in to our life that enriches us and expands our consciousness and allows us to be more fully who we really are. And years ago, when I was at the Summerlin House, several people came up from LA, and one of the gentlemen came up to me afterwards and he said, you know, and he had his finger like this. I went, ooh, we're going to do the finger thing now. You should not be speaking like this. This is only for men. Women are not supposed to do this. And I went, I said, really? Nobody told me that. I opened my mouth and what came forth came forth. I do not know. And so afterwards, I talked to some of my men friends who are spiritual teachers, and they said, well, you know, that's absolutely right, except that you don't know any better, so you're just going to go ahead and do it anyway. And several people, men had said to me, if you were just from India and you just had this little, you know, little cloth on and you sat cross-legged and you did your thing, then we'd just be perfectly happy. But you're not like that. You're like this, and like that, and like this, you know? And I'm happy. Oh, my gosh. Oh, it's supposed to be so serious. I can't do that, because I don't know how to do that part. But what I do know is that if you come into the knowing of who you are, and you have peace, and love, and light, and joy, that your life is going to work. And remember that the feeling aspect of love is joy. So if today there was no joy in your life, there was no love in your life this day. But if in this day you had joy, even if it was just for a split second, it could have been a ray of sunshine or a flower or a smile on someone's face or maybe the smile on your own face. That moment was true love. That moment was true love. And we have beliefs that love has to look a certain way, and peace, and, you know, all of these wonderful things that are part of a path, are part of a belief system. And yet the truth is that it's got to fit within who we are. And the more beliefs we allow to fall away, the more simplicity there comes in who we really are. And whatever our wants, needs, or desires are in the world, they're not predicated on more. They're predicated on what is joyful. Understand? For many people, the grasping that they have to try and fill the emptiness within themselves, because they have been given a belief, and they believe that belief, that this emptiness that they feel inside can never be filled. And that emptiness began a very long time ago. And within that emptiness, there can be great fullness. But only if we are open to the possibility that we can let go of the belief that we are empty. We can go beyond the belief of we are not lovable. We are absolutely lovable because we are love. That we must have in our belief, contrary to having been told, you're not lovable. Or if you'll just change enough, then I'll love you. I don't really like who you are now, so if you just change a little bit, then I'll love you a little bit more. Has anybody heard that one? I've heard that one. I mean, I grew up with that one. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And my mother used to say the little poem, there was a little girl who had a little curl right in the middle of her forehead. And when she was good, she was very, very good. And when she was bad, she was horrid. Oh, Lord! And every time she said that little poem, it was because she believed I was horrid. Now, I must say, I was very precocious. And I had a lot of energy. And I was just who I was. And it was difficult because the rest of the family was quite staid and very much on purpose. And boy, howdy. I mean, you know, I learned how to do that eventually, but in the meantime, I got a lot of imprinting, both consciously and unconsciously, that began to move me in ways that I said, this isn't the truth of who I am. I have to find out who I really am. I have to go beyond the beliefs of this family entity and of the individuals within the family, I being one of them, to see who I am. And perhaps I'm really, how shall I say, a satellite around the greater entity. And perhaps my job is to represent something that is certainly of the family entity, but not having to be completely in it and absorbed into it. My older brother and sister have now become the matriarch and the patriarch of the family entity, and perhaps you have siblings who have likewise done that, or perhaps you have become one of those positions. And if that is so, then you have taken on the obligation and responsibility of the beliefs that the family must be carried on in a particular way. And when my brother got married and had a son, it meant that the name would be carried on, because two of we daughters said, we're not interested in children. And one said, I will have two boys, but that was the name of her husband. And so the family entity has survived another generation. It's just so amazing. And I honor, in so many families, this is the deal. This is the whole reason that they gather and come together, and they have to marry just the right person and the right energy to have their kids grow up in the right way. And is this familiar? And did we fall in that kind of, for me, a place where I said, you know what? The truth of my being is not there, and I have to go and find out what that is. And each of us is in a position where we are being invited every day to say, what is the truth of my being in this moment? And am I in love? Am I in joy? Am I in peace? Have I found that love, light, peace, and joy within myself? And where is the light? Well, folks, it's not out here. Where is it? Right in here. That light is so phenomenal. And the light that is embracing us and holding us and nurturing us is so incredible. For me, the first time I truly experienced light in that early mystical experience I had was the light that was emanating off the figure that was standing at the end of my bed, who happened to be Jesus. But the light that was emanating from his presence was absolutely incredible. And he spoke to me, though I cannot remember what was said, but the light I will never forget. And at the end of that, and some of you know this, I went to my parents' bedroom, I knocked on the door, and they said, come in. And I said to my parents, I've just seen Jesus at the end of my bed talking to me. And my father, without hesitation, turned to me and said, you're a very lucky little girl. That changed my life forever. If they had said, from a belief system, no, stop, that's not it, then some other place would have unfolded and a journey, another journey would have happened. But as a result of that knowing, from that moment on, the voice began and has never stopped. And I knew the truth of my own experience. Someone could say, well, that you just hallucinated that. I'd say, well, what a hallucination. Thank you, God. I'll take that hallucination. Thank you very much. So it is the knowing, the deep awareness that the light is within us. And when I look upon you, yes, I see your physical form and I see who you are. But what I'm really looking at is the light that is within each of you. I could not truly see you if the light was not there. But because I see you, I see that energetic of light. And the light in the room, for those of you who are aware of light, it begins to, as we are together, the union and communion of our souls in this room begins to flow, and there's a rippling energy of consciousness that moves through the room. And it's almost as though, and I tried to explain it, it was very hard, when you look upon the ocean and you see the light shining on the ocean, it looks like little diamonds. The divine said to me, see that, because the light that is shining upon that water, it is in the water and of the water, but it's not the water, but it is the water. Here's one of the great paradoxes, that we appear to be so solid, and yet the truth is that this light is in us and through us and as us, and even as we are allowing ourselves to be joyful, that light is so bright. When you smile upon another person, that light is so bright. The reason that I want to embrace every person who comes into this room is because the moment we connect and we simply have that moment of embracing, the light just goes, it's very powerful. And when we are in the presence of anybody who is joyfully alive, I mean light. The first time I saw Cirque du Soleil, I went, I mean, it laid me back. I went, thank you, wow. I mean, these people love what they're doing so much, and it has been so beautifully choreographed. I don't know, I hope all of you have a chance to see it in your lifetime. It is just incredible, and it is light made manifest in these bodies, and we get to go and watch light moving, and oh, it's just the exquisiteness of it, just gives me goosebumps. And I feel the same way when I take my walk in the morning, and I'm just walking on the road, and then I'm walking on the grass and the ground, and I'm listening to the birds sing, and I'm watching the light change, and particularly now that we've got the fog, you know, coming in, and it's very mystical for me, and I can hear things that I don't normally hear, and I feel this level of energy that's so beautiful. And the cars are buzzing by, you know, and they're doing their thing, and I'm just doing my thing. But I feel the presence of the light, and I feel that as I am stepping, even though, and as Thich Nhat Hanh, that wonderful Buddhist teacher, speaks of, that if you're doing mindful walking and you're placing your foot upon the earth, and then the next, and then the next, and you're being mindful of how, and as a dancer I can certainly say, I am very mindful of how my foot and the weight of my foot and the weight of my body and then the transference of the weight to the next foot, how all of that is very, not only mindful, but I can sense that it's the light that I am moving. I'm moving the light within me. When you get on the telephone, I mean, I love the telephone. I'm not wild about the computer, but I love the phone. Now, why would I love the phone? Because I get to move the light all the way across the planet. I talk to people way on the other side of the planet, and they talk back to me. And we're just speaking light through these wires that have been so beautifully connected so that we can just pass light back and forth. Now, I think computers are great because they are, you know, as we are talking about now, the mind of Mother Earth being manifest. The mind of Mother Earth, all around now. Everybody is connected. And if, when you look upon your computer, you see the light coming from it, and you see your light being brought into it, then that will be a light-filled experience. If you're just doing it as a mental body, you know, I've got to give you all to do, and boop, 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 and do, okay, that's fine. But that's doing. That has nothing to do with the light. But if you are aware, when you sit down and begin, before you even put your fingers on the keys, if you just bring your light to the computer, that's all you have to do. And it will do the rest. Because in consciousness, you have created the light to be where you want it to be. We have this extraordinary capacity to have the light anywhere we want it, whenever we want it. And most of us, we don't even do that. So the next time you pick up the phone, just bring that light right on through those wires. Doesn't mean it's what you're talking about. Talking about has nothing to do with it. It is the presence of your consciousness that the light will go and be with the person who's listening. And that light's going to go right in here and then right down in here, it's going to be fantastic. Okay? So that's computers and the telephone. Now, wherever you go in the world, when I get in my car, I sit in the light. How many of y'all do that? Raise your hand. Okay, one, two. All right. So I recommend that you move into your car and you just emanate the light within your whole car and surround it with light if you choose. Just be sitting there in the light and then just drive. Just have a really good time driving in the light. And wherever you go, wherever you park, I'm a parking fairy, by the way. And my husband says, we need a parking place. I say, parking fairy's here. And there's the parking space. Okay? It's because I take the light prior to where we have to park, folks. I don't sit in the car and say, gee, I wonder if we have a place to park. I say, no. Take the light to where you're going to park, and the space will be there waiting for you. Okay? The light is the light. The light is so incredible. And if you have beliefs that have been brought to you that say, no way, no, 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 then that is fine. But if you're ready, you can be a dynamic consciousness of light. And the light will be refreshing, refreshing. How many times have we gone at the end of the day and we have more to do, and you just go, oh. And I don't drink coffee or anything like that. I just have the light. And if I know that I've got something that I need to do and I just don't feel like I have the energy, I sit for a moment and I just bring in the light. I just breathe it in as many times as I need to, and I can actually feel the buoyancy of that, my consciousness, and the light emanating from me. And I am fully refreshed, and I can do whatever I need to do. Now, if you need stimulants, that's fine. Nothing wrong with coffee and tea. But why not try the light and see what happens? Hey, you know, you could have a little coffee and a little light. And people say, well, that was an interesting combination, you know? I mean, it's up to us to fulfill and be one with the light which we are, and then to allow the light to flow through us however we choose. So tonight, I wanted us to first work with what those particular energies are. Let us work first with our physical body, where we might have had a belief or beliefs that were imprinted upon us, and perhaps we still have them, or perhaps we have let them go. And if you could just take a moment to think of a belief or beliefs that you have had that were given to you as a child or as a young adult or even now, that is a belief around your physical body. Any kind of belief you have around your physical body. And it can be negative or positive. It doesn't make any difference which one it is.
Well, I know I just got rid of the devil. Sneezing.
No, this is good. This is good.
Oh, wow.
Because the physical body wants to be what? Light and filled. It wants that. It is already. But if you don't recognize it, then, you know.
That was a belief.
Okay, so Laura.
Well, I had a big teaching once because I was raised by a doctor, and so there was a pill for everything. But also, when something wasn't working in me, they were going to cut it out. And I broke that belief and said, you're not cutting it out.
Excellent.
Well, I was taught to believe that if I had asthma, I would always have asthma. Mm. That my grandfather had it, my mother had it, my mother died of it. Mm. And I don't have asthma.
Excellent.
Ever.
Wow. Woo! Fabulous.
I was taught, or I don't know if it's a belief or not. Well, I'll think of a good belief.
Okay, we'll come back.
I gave one.
Mm-hmm. What was yours again, Cynthia?
Oh, that when you sneeze, you're exorcising the devil.
Exorcising.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Well, I believe there's goodness in everyone. I always felt that way from a small child.
But around your physical body.
Around my physical body?
Yes, that's what we're doing with physical body now.
So, physical.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to think about that.
Okay, we'll come back.
You know, one was not just to me, but it was a belief that, you know, if you don't have a true breast, you know, it's not being feminine. You cannot be feminine without, you know, voluptuous breast.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that to me, it's just, no, it's not such so. You can be a goddess, and it's, you know, it's got nothing to do with volume. Mm-hmm. So it's been a good one.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you.
I think for me it was to not age.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to age. Because with the light, it doesn't make any difference how old you are. With the light, you're always young. Yeah. Thank you.
When I was told I'm too skinny and not strong enough to do anything. Mm-hmm. It's the belief has worked quite a bit. Meaning that I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm overcome it.
Totally. I can vouch for that.
Does diet include the physical activity?
Sure.
Yeah, definitely when I was a child, you know, I was kind of taught by my mom that, you know, to be happy to some degree, not fully, you know, we had to have lots of sugar in the house, probably because she loved it. But I definitely agree with that belief. I mean, it's still there, a tiny bit, but not.
That's a strong one, too.
Oh, it's very strong. It's
very strong. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that was hard to break. I mean, obviously, there's so many other things attached to it.
Of course.
You know, comfort food, oh, it's love, it's not just joy.
That's right.
That kind of thing. And anytime we start to feel our emotion, then we have to go for sugar. Like,
that's right.
Yeah, you know, we weren't really allowed to, you know, show emotion that much in terms of like anger or sadness or.
Yeah, we're going to get to the emotional body next. Hang on. We'll get to the emotional body next.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we'll get to that. So what was yours in the physical body?
Well, it's just simply to be like everyone else in the family. You know, play golf, do this, do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And,
but in your own physical body, what was the belief in the family around your physical body?
Oh, well, they were always saying somewhere in the family, oh, I see you lost some weight, or, oh, you know, no comment meant, you know, listen, you're not quite right.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
No comment, you're not quite right.
Well, you know, I kept trying to find other ideas, but the one that just must be so powerful is it's just so such a shame your jaw is so big and square.
Wow.
That head that was little and round like that. Only I would be tiny and round and color, I would actually be attractive.
Oh, bless you. Oh, that's a good belief to let go of. All right, thank you.
It crosses between emotional and physical, but you know, if you're going to go out and do something, you're going to get hurt. You have to be very careful.
Okay, but in your physical body, because that's really emotional.
No, if you're going to go out and do something.
Okay,
so
your physical could be injured in some way.
Yeah, like don't be an adventurous person because you'll get hurt.
Okay, good.
Again, I'm not sure if it's a belief. I mean, I identify twins, so the belief was that you should look alike, physical, rather than color.
So rather than individuating, they wanted you to remain connected. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you.
And I don't know if this is just about physical body, but that sex or any contact with. It was very secret, and there was no, you know, you don't touch, there's no physical contact. Yeah, that one, yeah. I'm overcoming. Let's take light on them. Mm.
Thank you.
Well, I was told absolutely women are weak. Mm-hmm. Mm. Pick the wrong sex? Yeah, I do not believe that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Physically, I was always told never to be outdoor. Mm.
Interesting.
Exactly what I do.
Yeah.
And
yes.
What did you say again?
Physically, I should never be outdoors.
Oh, shouldn't be outdoors. Okay.
Shouldn't.
That
shouldn't.
I was, you know, kind of like what she was saying. Be away from the element of hurt and pain. Mm-hmm.
Something might happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Made sure I did that.
A lot of fear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would wonder, Mary, how many of us here have consciously gone against every single belief our parents imparted, because I know if I don't
get mine, all the hands should go up.
Not all of them.
And if not, start now. It's never too late. Okay.
Maybe it's set up that way. So that
way this is a divine setup. Absolutely. We come into embodiment just so that we can grow in our consciousness, and we come into these bodies so that we can know when the change has occurred. Because our bodies tell us, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, when we've made a shift. Otherwise, if we were just floating around, you know, without these bodies, we wouldn't have something that's telling us moment to moment to moment what's really going on, if we have the ears to listen. And I don't mean just these ears.
So it's like a big measuring system. Mm. Well, that was, you know, my belief. My father used to come home and tell us what he weighed, and how many miles he ran that day, and you know, I think those were the two main measurements. So I kind of went, oh, okay. What are my measurements? You know, like, are my measurements small enough to wear a two-piece bathing suit, or, you know, if it was really tight, like your measurements had to be. And it wasn't, he didn't say stuff like, you need to be the size, but it was just very important to be the right.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Very body conscious.
Yeah, very
huge.
I'll give you a real one.
Okay.
Mine was really a joke, and yes. I never did believe that. I was a girl in a family of four kids, three brothers, spread out in age 16 years. And my perception was, you wanted to be male. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In you know, in my family, it was not fun. It wasn't fun to be, you know, and I think I picked this up from my mother, who struggled mightily. And my, you know, my conclusion was, female sucks, you know, and, you know, it's the guys who are having all the fun and all the freedom. And so I was a tremendous tomboy, and I really was quite pissed off that I wasn't a male for quite a while.
Oh boy, these bodies. Anybody else?
Yes,
yes, thank you.
Michelle rang a tune to me. I was one of seven kids. I'm the oldest seven. And my family always teased me because I was so skinny. I was very, very small as a child. Even in high school, I was small and very, very thin. So when I graduated out of high school, I was one of the tallest ones in my class, but still rather skinny. But I was always very conscious of being too thin. Well, now you know I'm not, but that went on for quite a while. Mm.
And I think the body awareness that grew from particularly the 50s forward was huge, huge. And as a dancer, I was working dancing with two major companies in New York, and the main choreographer and head of one of the dance companies, he said, "I don't care how much you weigh as long as you don't have any lumps." Now, at the same time, Balanchine said that every single one of his dancers had to look absolutely the same. So they would have ribs taken out so that their waist was small enough. Oh, yes. They would have their feet broken so that their point would be the best. The size of their head had to be exactly the same as everybody else's. And the use of cocaine was huge to keep their weight down and to keep their energy up because they had to be so thin.
Cocaine.
So, and of course, we came from another point of view altogether, which was how much can we do with these physical instruments that we have, you know? So the choreographers that I worked with were just, they said, you know, just try that. You know, we try these amazing things. And those of you who've seen Philobolus, that particular company, they have a lot of dancers who are both gymnasts, have come from a gymnastic background. And all of us were doing very experimental things. It was a huge, great big time in New York at that time. So much was going on. And we never thought about our bodies other than this is the instrument that's going to express what we want to express. And the gentleman I worked with, whose name is Alan Nicolai, he's since passed on, he would say when we'd be choreographing something and we'd be, you know, and he'd say, stop. We thought it was really terrific, right? And he said, it's not that you want to cry on stage, it's that you want to bring your audience to tears. So, in the physical body, there is this incredible potential to be able to express all that we are. And often we do it, obviously, through clothing, through color, through our hair, through our face, however it needs to be. And if the body has not been in some way praised or made to feel good as children, that's huge. And those beliefs stay with us, do they not? Even as we change and look in the mirror and say, we have changed. We have changed. We're not that anymore. But the child within can still feel some of the pain around our physical body. It's really amazing that we can honor and grow, and I hope all of us now have a deep love and respect for our body. Our bodies are so incredible. Ah! I just love being in the body. Just get such a kick out of it. And every day I get out of bed and I go, hey, body, how you doing? You know? Hey, you're all here and everybody's wiggling around. That's good. I mean, it's just, you know, you just got to love being the physical body. And you're breaking all those beliefs that have said, you can't do this, you can't do that, and that's dangerous, and blah, 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 blah. We find our way, and we carry this throughout our whole life, do we not? Until we leave the earth plane, we're in this body. And so to love it and nurture it and to have great respect for it and to dress it however we choose to dress it. I mean, my body happens to just love color, so I just love color. And I rejoice in color, and I can't wait to get up in the morning and put color on, you know? And the same thing is true of how we are in the world. I grew up in a family, 4 children. I'm next to the youngest. And because of one of my sisters having great physical difficulty, all of us then, as we know in studying codependency, it becomes, we are in a pattern where this, the individual who is having the great difficulty, we then become the ones who become the caregivers, and we are a part of that codependency where our whole self-worth is about taking care of the other. Taking care of the other. And I had to break that, and I still have moments of it because it's so deeply ingrained in me. And yet the freedom that I had in my physical body allowed me to be able to express what we're going to talk about next, which is the emotional body. And some of us have already alluded to it. The beliefs we have in the emotional body, children are seen but not heard. I grew up with that one big time. And you will only be spoken to, you will only speak when you're being spoken to. And what you say has to be in the belief system of the family. You may not go outside it. Maybe some of y'all didn't have that. I certainly did. And it was strong. And if you didn't speak correctly, you had to speak correctly. And in the South, they say, Southern people say, yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Y'all know that one? Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. My mother, she said, you will never say that. I will not have it spoken in this house. It will be either yes, mother, or not at all. Okay, mom. Oh! I mean, she was really English. And so we would say, yes, mother, yes, father, but behind the back. So even the way we wanted to communicate with each other had to be, you know, very, very careful. And I honor that in our emotional bodies, those energies that really were such deep beliefs about you couldn't, I mean, forgive me, and if I offend anyone here, I'm sorry, but there's a word I love and I want to say it to all of you now. Are you ready? It's a four-letter word that starts with an F. If you don't want to hear it, do like this, and you'll only hear part of it. Fuck. Now, there are times when that word is very needed. Does everybody agree with me in this room? There are times when we need this word. Not often, but from time to time. And the divine said to me, every word you say is holy. I said, okay. So can I say this word just once in a millennium? Once in a lifetime? And of course, I was told, of course. Because when you say it, you're going to say it from the place of your consciousness. You're not going to say it in anger. You're not going to say it to defile someone else or to defile yourself. You're not going to say it in a belittling way. You're going to say it however that word is going to be said. So I honor that in our emotional body, if we could all for a moment go into our emotional body and find a place there where there is a very strong belief. Some of them we've already spoken of, but you can repeat it again or have, if there's another one, that in the emotional body there is a feeling or a series of feelings which were either unacceptable or that you had to stuff down or you had no opportunity to express them. And it can be a singular or it can be a grouping of feelings. And you may still have them there and still have to hold on to them because they haven't been released from your emotional body. So when you're ready, we'll just start. You ready?
Yeah. So I was the emotional body of my family. And I believed that I was responsible for everybody else's emotions.
Thank you.
I grew up in a family of 6 kids, and we weren't allowed emotions. And especially too much giggling or too much laughing or too much rowdiness. It might get out of control. So there wasn't a lot of that. Or hugging. That was scary. Hugging was scary. You might cry or something. You know, so there was all of that. And it took a long time of hard work to actually hug somebody, you know, and learn that it was okay to have feelings.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if this is backwards. It's probably one of my beliefs is that I get it backwards.
All right. This is good. This is really good.
But I remember being, you know, in love and the people around me didn't know about it. And I just didn't, you know, I don't know, I still think I might be getting this backwards, but, you know, I just thought, what's up? That they would say, my mom would say, you're teaching us about love. But I still don't think I had anybody to relate to. What I knew what the truth was, like it's the light or something, like I knew when I was little what the truth was, and they didn't know. And so there was sort of no way of knowing I was okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's big. Yeah.
And that was when I was little, I was relating to the cat food bowls. And I was looking up going, how come you don't know?
I do understand that. Thank you.
My sort of role in the family, or my perception of what was going on in the family, was that if I needed anything, that it would jeopardize the survival of probably my mother.
Yes.
that as long as I had no needs, that my mother wouldn't.
Yeah.
You
know, so how did
she
that,
could die?
Yeah.
If
so
I
how did you feel? What was the feeling that came up because of that?
Just a kind of a an independence and a stoicism, where I just, you know, I took care of myself.
Yes.
And I did not voice, no matter what was going on with me, I would never tell, you know, anyone.
Okay.
I could be very, very physically ill, for instance, right, at a very young age, and not say anything to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And know that I was very ill.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Well, I was raised to be a good Catholic girl, and I wasn't. I had to go to a private school, had to go to Mass every day, had to eat fish on Fridays, which I hated. But, I'm the one that didn't stay with the Catholic Church, so that's always been a push.
So
my parents actually made fun of me. Because I didn't follow their rules with them.
Okay. So in your emotional body, what did you feel?
I felt like I was an outcast because I was the only one that didn't join the group.
And did they shame? Did they shame you?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So the feeling is shame. And shame is underneath some of the things that you all have talked about. Okay.
But
the shame.
Both
unlovable. But you see, if you're unlovable, that's very shaming. To be unloved is very shaming.
And I'm glad I didn't stay with the pact. I'm glad.
Yes.
I really am.
Well, that's part of your soul agreement that you made before you came in the body, that you would break away, and whatever the cost was, you would do it.
It's so, just not my belief.
That's right.
The whole thing.
You could be in this room and not have broken away.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's quite a few beliefs. I remember my mother, you know, with great pride telling everybody that it's not because I am a daughter or my brother was, not because we were children that we were special. And we really felt it, that we had to overachieve to please her, and still it was not enough. Mm-hmm. So always, you know, came up with, I'm not special.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not enough.
Not enough.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I was first born and basically inherited a belief that I should do everything right and perfect and be a lady and not step outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And in the long run, what happened was I felt like I wasn't part of the family because it seems like they were hooping and hollering and drinking a lot and taking drugs along the way, and I never did those things.
Mm-hmm.
When on family vacations, so I would just go say hi, stay for a couple of days, and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had this not part of a group.
So, what is the feeling in your emotional body around that?
I'm alone, and I'm not part of a group. Wherever I am, I stay on the outside of a group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm teaching whatever, if I'm teaching workshops, I go do it and leave.
Right. So it's the aloneness.
Mm-hmm.
The aloneness.
I know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Being left out.
Mm-hmm.
Being left out.
I think I choose to be there,
yeah,
although I step in and out,
mm-hmm,
because I feel safer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you.
For me, it was feeling sad. It didn't, because it seemed too painful, especially for my father. So he would be like, please don't be sad. I'll do anything, but just don't be sad.
Mm-hmm.
So even to this day, but I finally got to the point where I'm like, Dad, it's okay. I can be sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to figure out in any way that, you know, I shouldn't feel sad. So.
Excellent. Thank you.
Fear, I would say, because the threat of punishment was always hanging over my head,
mm-hmm,
and some had to do with the Catholic upbringing also.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the fear of being punished for whatever thing I do wrong, which I did not feel it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't the judgment about that, it was wrong, so I had to be punished, and including corporal punishment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right.
Good old finger.
Thank you.
Is that French?
It starts with that.
It's universal.
You're turning red.
Well, gosh, there's so many emotions I could talk about. I mean, I could probably talk about all of what was kind of brought up. I think we all could. We've all experienced to some degree, but I think the one that kind of is in my consciousness now that I'll choose to talk about is, you know, feeling responsible for other people's happiness. Mm-hmm. A little bit of that codependency. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I got it from my mom. I felt responsible for her happiness. So I still feel responsible sometimes for more than I should for other people's happiness.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you.
I was the overly sensitive one in the family. And as a result of that, I have a lot of sadness about, like, I was bad because I was too sensitive all the time. I was feeling too much. I was expressing, I was emoting that feeling too. And it was bad, and I was not, I was supposed to have a lot of control over my emotions, and I was like, fuck it, no, this is how I feel. And I would cry a lot, you know, I would really, so sadness, just sadness over that, like, I was bad because I was that way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there was a bottom-line current of anxiety in my house around lack, you know, that there's not going to be enough, so I'll just say the underlying current of anxiety that I carry from that.
Thank you.
The thing I keep hearing is, what will the neighbors think? And don't be conceited. You know, don't take credit for anything, because then it'd be bragging. And then you're not good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always something more you could achieve. Mm-hmm. But don't brag.
Thank you.
So mine is the needs too, that I don't have any needs, I shouldn't have any needs, and I was the youngest in the family, so everybody was busy with their needs, and I was too little to like organize, so I, you know, but you learn to take care of yourself and feel that you don't matter.
Thank you.
Oh, shame. Yeah, undeniably, it's a very shame-based family, and it was not even implicit, but quite explicit. Donna, go to your room until you have a smile on your face. I'd be in there for hours. You know, but yeah, only smile was allowed. And
only smiling was allowed.
Only smiling. Oh, God. For good little girls, you only smile. Moods were not acceptable.
Shirley Temple.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think I grew up around having to be careful about what I felt or said or did, because I had to protect the family flag.
You had to what?
Protect the family flag.
The flag?
Yeah. It's how we were seen from the outside.
Where did you go?
In India. Yeah.
Well, I thank you very much. And, of course, for me, it was, again, being, I was the emotional energy, emotional body for my family. And it was important for me to have taken that role. Again, it's each of the things we've talked about, there's soul agreements that we made prior to coming into the body where we said, this is how we're going to grow. This is how we're going to become conscious. This is how we're going to take steps to become who we really are. And our temperaments, we all have very fine sensitive temperaments in this group. We're all sensitives in the sense that in our family, we had our feelers out all the time. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
I knew exactly what was going on and when it was going on and when I had to skedoodle out of the way and when I could stand and deal with the fire. So we're all sensitives. And there's a wonderful book called Very Sensitive People. It was written some years ago. And it talks about folks like us, where we, I mean, and I used to describe it, I would almost feel as though I had sandpaper being rubbed on my skin in my family. and I would have to retreat and do something, so I would be sent to my room so I could recover to go back out and get more of this. And the abrasiveness was very sub rosa. It was not in your face. It was not. It was very subtle and very clear. And remember how babies learn through facial expression and tone of voice and body language. Now that's how we got it, folks. Everybody in this room, that's how we got it. They didn't have to say a word. Mm-hmm. Facial expression, mm-hmm. body language, tone of voice. Oh, mm-hmm. they were masters at it. And I vowed I was either just going to be straight out there or I had to leave the room. And as a result, all of us have chosen lives where we are involved in the world in very specific ways. And as a result of being involved in the world, we have learned how to do what? I call it, in the South, we call it loving on each other. We like to love on each other. We like to love on the people in our lives. And we are loved in return. And often, in the loving on of the other, we're healing those parts of ourselves that were never loved, of course. And that's the light of which I speak. When you're able to open and embrace the other in such a full and clear way, and to understand that that love is far beyond just the exchange that's happening in the moment. And what about your own self-love? I ask you to really focus on that. I'm assuming that some of you have spiritual practice, and if you don't, that's all right. If you just wake up in the morning and just say your name, I love you. That's all you have to do. That's a wonderful spiritual practice right there. If everybody in the world did it, we wouldn't have any war. So you just say your name, I love you. Something that resonates with you, because often we don't hear enough. Michelle and I say that we love each other many times a day and in many different ways. It's not just enough to wake up in the morning and say, oh honey, I love you. I don't think so. I think it's very important. And if you have a dog or a cat or anything that you love, and if there is a picture that you love, it can be animate or inanimate, it doesn't make any difference, but that you extend your love out from you to whatever that is. And if it's music, my goodness, don't you love it when you hear a piece of music, and I don't care if it's rock and roll or symphony. It just, I don't know about you, but I can hardly sit still. It touches my soul, it touches every cell in my body. And we have asked that we have love like that in our lives, have we not? So, as we go forth from this place, we can be a choice in every moment. We can say, I'm not feeling well today, or this and this and this is happening today, or I've got to do blah, 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 blah today, and I've got so much on my plate, I don't know if I can get through it all. And then you can just step back and say, so here's a day that I can love. I have this whole day to love. And I can love as little or as much as I want, and nobody is going to know or be the wiser, except that if I love a little more, perhaps someone will receive a little more love. And the love I send to them may be the only love they receive in that day. I may be the only one who brings love to them. And I can say a word of love, a thank you, or gratitude for how I look upon them and bring my love to them. And you don't have to even be in their presence. You can just remember them. I thank my mother and father there on the other side. I talk to them all the time. I say, thank you, thank you. I'm deeply appreciative that you are my parents, because everything that you taught me was something I needed to learn, and you are relentless, for which I am grateful now. In the moment, I don't know that I'm so thankful, but now I am. So whether it's in form or formlessness, your love is completely there the moment you hold the thought. And it can go all the way around the world. And if you want to work with Mother Earth, because we're going to sit in the silence here for a few moments, and at the end of our silence, I will be saying a prayer in which I bring Mother Earth into our hearts. So however it is that it works for you to be able to feel that love and express that love, please do so. And if you say, this day I do not feel loving, then the only thing you have to do is love you. You don't have to love anybody else. Just love you if you don't feel love that day. Only we will do it. And if everybody in this room just did that, do you know what would happen? in the collective consciousness, the vibration of that collective consciousness will be raised, and the amount of love that's in that collective consciousness will never cease. That's all it takes. Where two or more are gathered, the energy is multiplied 10,000 times, 10,000 times, which means that exponentially we've already gone into the infinite. We've gone all the way from the formless into form, and from the form into formless. That's what happens when we meet in a group like this. So, here you are. Here we are. Now, you all will never leave my consciousness for as long as I'm on the earth plane. Whether I ever see you again or not doesn't make any difference. Your consciousness and my consciousness will always be one. And my heart will be in your heart, and your hearts will be in my heart. Even if you don't want it to be in my heart. Sorry. It's there. Because our hearts are not just this little thing in this body. Our hearts are gigantic. But it's only we who decide the measure of our heart. Now, when we were growing up, our hearts felt pretty much like this. Or maybe like that. Maybe it was really tough. Okay? But what happens when we say yes? Our love will be infinite. Infinite. If that's the thought you think and it's the truth of your being, you will have that experience for the rest of this embodiment. And when you leave this embodiment, you will enter into the love which you have held in this lifetime. That's what you will enter into. Pretty cool. Okay, I'd like to make the calls and then we'll sit briefly. I'd like to make the calls. I call now for the light of the divine to create a perfect circle of love, light, peace, and joy around all who are present here in the physical and also on the inner planes. I wish to acknowledge and give thanks for all souls who gather to be with us, whether in or out of embodiment, and for the radiance in which we find ourselves. Thank you. I call now for the infilling and indwelling of the divine within all of our bodies, planes, and cells. I acknowledge and give thanks for this, and for the divine consciousness that is available to us 24 hours a day, unceasingly. Thank you. I call now that we enter into the serene center of our being within our hearts, and there we enter the silence, allowing ourselves to fall more deeply still in love with the divine which we are. Thank you.